is that
Oh my gosh.
Well,
you made chicken soup for. It's not even like your first show, whatever. But Jesus, these are the only things that they're good to.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee. I will call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. First on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for March 22.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda, Representative Cal Barr, House File 3282. Welcome to the Transportation Committee, Representative Barr, to your bill. Oh, I need a motion. Why don't you start the discussion? I'll make the motion once I find out what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a pretty straightforward bill. It eliminates the need for intrastate household mover tariffs to be maintained at the Department of Transportation. Instead, keeps those tariffs in-house at each mover. And to speak to the specifics on the bill, I have testifier Ms. Megan Forbes.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Megan Forbes. I'm an attorney at the Institute for Justice. We're a national nonprofit law firm that works to repeal anti-competitive laws that limit economic opportunities. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3282 today. In Minnesota, at the Institute for Justice, we've been working for many years to improve the laws related to in-state household goods movers. Back in 2008, we helped eliminate an outdated requirement that new movers pass a public convenience and necessity test before they could work in the state, which eliminated an artificial cap on the number of movers allowed to work here in Minnesota. And we support this bill because it eliminates another outdated requirement, the requirement that in-state movers have to file their tariffs, their prices, with MnDOT. The bill instead requires movers to simply keep their tariffs at their offices and to make them available to consumers or the commissioner of MnDOT upon request. Right now, Minnesota is one of only 10 states that requires movers to file their tariffs with the state. And movers are also the only carrier in Minnesota that have to file their tariffs with the state. We think this filing requirement should be repealed because it creates needless red tape and it does not provide any meaningful protection to consumers. MnDOT has only received 4 consumer complaints related to tariff violations over what we estimate to be approximately 300,000 moves, and would still be able to resolve consumer complaints under this bill because nothing in this bill eliminates MnDOT's authority to be able to investigate consumer complaints or to be able to use the tariffs moving forward to fine or penalize movers who violate the law. I just want to highlight a couple of things briefly that the bill does not do. It does not change the requirement that movers have to fix their prices in their tariffs. Movers would still be required to charge the prices that are in their tariffs. It also does not in any way change MnDOT's authority to investigate tariffs and resolve consumer complaints, as I mentioned before. MnDOT would still have the same exact authority. We have learned that MnDOT will be saving approximately $750 each year by not having this requirement, and MnDOT has said that they have no concerns about this change. In conclusion, we support this bill because we think it strikes the right balance. It allows MnDOT to continue resolving consumer complaints, and it also eliminates an outdated requirement that does not benefit the public. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. You know, I understand what a tariff means in popular news today, but what is the meaning of tariff in this situation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, a tariff is essentially a report of prices and rates that the mover is charging. They're several pages long, and the movers are legally bound to charge the rates that are in their tariffs. So it's a little different from what we think of as a tariff in another sense.
I assume that. I just thank you for the clarification. Does the department care to testify to this bill? I don't see the department. You were behind Representative Rosenthal there. Scott, I didn't see it. So a definite no from the department. Representative Baker has a question.
I have a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I run a restaurant, and you know, obviously I publish my pricing on a menu, and I'm trying to find the correlation of why does MnDOT find it's important, or maybe they don't because they're not opposing the bill, that at one point that you have to put your rates out there publicly, even now if it's not public and it's on file. Why is it important for MnDOT to sort of know what that is? I mean, if Representative Daniels had a company, a moving company, and I had one and I charged twice as much, why would that matter to anybody? Is there something behind this that's driving this? If you could, thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, these tariffs are used to resolve consumer complaints when there is a pricing dispute. That's my understanding of why MnDOT has an interest in continuing to have these tariffs moving forward for these particular businesses that are working with transporting consumer household goods in states. So that's why MnDOT's interested in continuing to have tariffs available.
Thank you. Anyone else care to testify to this bill? Representative Barr, any closing remarks?
Thank you for the committee for your time, and just request favorable disposition of the bill.
Thank you. I will now move that House File 3282 be passed to the General Register. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. You're on your way, Representative Barr.
Thank you.
Next up, I have House File 1876, Representative Swazinski.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I will move that House File 1876 be passed to the General Register. Representative Swazinski, to your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We have the 8-9 amendment that I would like, if you could move that, Mr. Chair, to get the bill in the shape through negotiations and visiting with the department.
Thank you. I'll move the 8-9 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Your bill is amended. Representative Swazinski, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So, you know, what this bill does essentially, about a year and a half ago, through some data privacy issues, the Petroleum Marketers Retailers Association, who currently does the lookup on behalf of a lot of local law enforcement agencies when there's a drive-off, so when someone either purposely or inadvertently leaves a gas station without paying, the association themselves gain access by writing down the license plate number and then looking up and then sending through the agency. They currently have the ability to look up that information and send that person essentially a collections notice. About a year and a half ago, they lost the ability to look up the lease vehicle. So if you have a lease vehicle through a bank, the information that they would receive from the department would go as far as the bank or the lessee. Obviously, if you're a person leasing a vehicle, that can be quite troublesome to receive a notice from your bank that maybe you forgot to pay for $50 or $25 worth of fuel. This simply gets the state back to where we used to be. The petroleum marketers saved the state and local agencies about $750,000 by doing a lot of this work. We were able, through a negotiation, to find a workaround so that in those maybe one out of 10 times that a leasing vehicle is brought up on the system, that the agency will provide the actual address of the person that owns the vehicle, not the leasee. And that's what this bill does. It saves the state and local units of government money and gets it to where it used to be. So that's what the bill does.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. I'd like to bring the department up to address the fiscal note. Is the department here? Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Mm-hmm. Get a great chair there.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
My name is Kim Jacobson. I'm the Data Practices Coordinator for Driver and Vehicle Services. And this amendment takes care of the need for a fiscal note.
So we're down to zero. Is that correct?
Yeah. Correct.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that was clear to the members of the committee. Any questions for the testifier or for Representative Szczesny. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Szczesny, you say that this relates to the specific circumstance where you have a driveway without paying for the gas. But are there other uses this, or does this open up other opportunities for trade associations to access that data to maybe do a promotional campaign or anything like that?
Representative Szczesny.
No, Mr. Chair, members. This is specifically, you know, from a promotional standpoint, this is focused on petroleum retailers, and it's very regulated. They have members of their staff that log into a system, do the lookup, and under the rare circumstances, I mean, 1 out of 10 or maybe 2 out of 10 times when they do that lookup, when there's a leasee at that end, they're able to work through the agency to do a lookup. Physically, I'm not sure if it's going to be a physical paper application or an email, say, hey, we ran into a lease in this situation. May we please have access to the actual physical address. And so this would simply be, I don't know if you look in your packet, but I do have kind of what that format of what the sheet that gets sent to the individuals. I can share that with the committee if you'd like.
If I could interject, if these convenience store operators are members of an association. Yeah. It's actually the staff of the association that does the lookups, so it's restricted to, I think, just two people that have the authority to actually look up this information and then pursue the compensation. So it's not like people are sitting in the back office of the convenience store checking on people's driver's licenses. Is that helpful? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, again, my question is more, I can see I appreciate that, that's valuable, but I also don't want them looking up addresses and say, well, we've got this promotion, I don't want to, you see, for one can imagine what they may want, but it would be limited only for when somebody's accused of driving away without paying the bill.
Representative Szczesny.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have Representative Baker now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When did this law change from being able to look at the leased owner, I guess, in the past, to a year, year and a half ago? It sounds like it was pre-Minlar's things, so it changed before Minlar's came out. So maybe even from the department, if you can tell me, or maybe the author, Representative Szczesny, why was that changed a couple of years ago?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, and members, the law did not change. The statute 168.345 says that only law enforcement and government agencies can have access to leasee data. There was an issue with the way the printing function worked with our old system, that if they printed the motor vehicle record, the leasees showed up on the printout. We were not aware of that. Once we became aware of it, we made a change, and that was no longer available, so that we would comply with the statute.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Baker.
Thank you. So with the new Minlar's rollout, did that get corrected as well, just from the data privacy information that you're looking at? Has that been fixed now moving forward then with Minlar's?
Ms. Jacobs.
Yes, it has.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I have is, as I'm reading this, somebody takes gasoline, they don't pay for it. Normally, to me, that would be theft, and why wouldn't you be reporting it to the police?
Representative Szczesny, do you want to tackle that, or do you want to phone a friend?
Sure. Mr. Chair, so, you know, in the conversations we've had as this bill's moved forward, because of the nature of it, you're looking at maybe $20, $50. You know, oftentimes that's seen as a small crime, and a percentage of the time it's not even a genuine theft. It's literally, I've done it myself, where I put my credit card in the machine, I thought it read, and I'm like, you know, see you later, you know, fuel starts coming out, and I figured we're good to go. And so, you know, sometimes it's accidental. And so by the association moving through, you know, a lot of law enforcement aren't necessarily following through with this as well. And so because of the tasking of we're putting on local law enforcement agencies, it's not necessarily a high priority. And the association has found that moving in this direction actually maybe increases the rate of financial return.
Representative Mason, a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for the author or Ms. Jacobson, I assume that that these associations and their accesses that will be recorded in the audit trail data. So if somebody wanted to check in on their use of the system, they could do that.
Ms. Jacobson.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Keel. Taken care of. Very good. Any other questions for the testifier or the author? Anyone else care to testify on this bill? For or against? Seeing none, Representative Susinski, any closing remarks?
No, I appreciate your support and thank you for the good questions.
Thank you. I'll renew my motion and House File 1876 be passed to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As amended.
Thank you for that. As amended. You should be sitting here. there's nobody sitting there. They're all here. No wonder I can't function. I'll renew my motion again that House File 1876 as amended be passed to the Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You're on your way, Representative. Next up, we have House File 193. But I don't see the author. We will move on in that case. I don't see that author either. We're authorless.
Let's do it
again. No, I'm
joking. So. Roll call.
I don't see a lot of things right now. They all have an R after them. So.
Can't be funnier than the DFLE.
I can count, Representative Ornstein. We're just going to take a short recess for just a few minutes, and as soon as we have the right people in the room, we will move forward. Representative Hausman, do you have a comment?
Well, do we get credit for those last two bills?
Well, yeah. What kind of credit would you like?
We were so well behaved. I know. I think we're owed something now.
Well, I will put in an order for gold stars, and we'll see that you get one.
You got some M&Ms. It's not a gallon of gas.
Good luck. We'll just take a little break. We're in recess.
We were waiting to do the roll call on the council.
Again, hand on my M&Ms.
Is there a sub-caucus of the Dance Pro Republicans?
I'd like to reconvene the House Transportation Finance Committee. Welcome to committee, Representative Quam. House File 1933. I'd like to move the House File 1933 to pass to the General Register. Representative Quam, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And basically, this is more or less it's a technical bill, but it's been in works for a few years. Former Representative Beard and others have been trying to get this fixed so that we have, some flexibility in notification, because many of the smaller airports, in fact, the second largest, only has one paper in its city, and many of them just have a weekly, if that's the notification, reflects that as an option, and then getting some consistency so that local airports and jurisdictions around them can do zoning that's specific to them, and there's that flexibility. But I have a person here that can
give a little more clarity and answer questions.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Gogg. I'm representing MnDOT's Office of Aeronautics today. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 1933, which modifies the state's airport zoning laws. Since 1933, Minnesota has had laws providing for airport safety zoning, and since 1973, requiring the adoption of airport zoning ordinances to help ensure the safety of people on the ground and in the air by preventing incompatible development around airports. As airports change or grow, MnDOT began hearing from communities that they were having challenges under the current laws and regulations, which generally provide for a one-size-fits-all approach. In a concerted effort to be responsive to those concerns, MnDOT committed to a full and public evaluation of Minnesota's airport zoning laws. House File 1933 is the culmination of a five-year effort during which MnDOT engaged a broad range of stakeholders to ensure any proposal put forward was comprehensive and responsive to the challenges. During that evaluation, two key themes emerged. First, because airport planning and zoning is separate from municipal and county planning and zoning, and the respective processes are found in different chapters of state law, existing airport zoning ordinances are often forgotten and misunderstood. The result of that is improper enforcement of the ordinance, no enforcement at all, and property owners being unaware of land use restrictions. Second, because current law allows for little flexibility in terms of what an airport community can propose and what the state can approve, communities are unable to enact zoning that both meets the state's standard and yet recognizes a community's unique local considerations and conditions. House File 1933 proposes to address those themes in two ways. First, it proposes to better integrate airport planning and zoning with local processes by ensuring that when a community prepares a comprehensive plan, the plan identifies the location of existing airport zoning and that compatible uses are considered in those areas. Further, it proposes that any existing airport safety zoning be shown on a community's official zoning map to increase the zone's visibility for the benefit of citizens and businesses. Second, this bill proposes to increase the local and state's flexibility to enact airport zoning by establishing, in addition to the standard, an alternate path that can be customized with consideration of the community's unique local conditions. This option requires evaluation of certain criteria and can be used when a community determines that the state standard will not work for them. Additionally, the bill establishes a review period at the end of which MnDOT must provide a decision on any ordinance submitted for review. No timeline for review exists today. In conclusion, MnDOT is in strong support of this bill, which gives airport communities a much-needed tool in their planning toolbox that will help them better plan the role of their airport and their community for years to come. It is important to note that this proposal does not increase any government power or authority. This authority exists today. This bill increases flexibility for both local and state government to consider an alternative to the one-size-fits-all standard. Further, it does not add any new burdens to private property rights, but rather, at some locations, will likely result in fewer property owners being negatively impacted by airport safety zoning. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Quam or Mr. Gogg? Anyone else care to testify for or against this bill? Representative Quam, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got the fiscal note. Pleased that it's zero. Notice the reason I probably didn't get it is it lists someone else as a chief author. But thank you for consideration. I apologize. It wasn't on my schedule. I was enthralled in another series of bills in a different committee.
So is Representative Kosnick trying to steal your bill, Representative Quam? He's not here to defend himself, so. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1933 be passed the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Representative Quam, you're on your way. Finally today, we have House File 3273, Representative Albright. Welcome to Transportation Finance, Representative Albright. I will move House File 3273 be passed to State Government Finance. To you, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
House File 3273 for most of us in the room has become fairly familiar from the stops that it's already been made. But for the benefit of those in the audience or for around the table who are not familiar with House File 3273, let me just briefly run through some of the experiences that I have participated in and give you a brief synopsis of the bill itself. For 50 years, the Metropolitan Council has served as a regional policymaking body and governing agency for the Twin Cities seven-county metropolitan region. It was created in 1967 to deal with regional issues that transcend boundaries and directed the legislature by the legislature to plan for the orderly and economic development of the seven-county metro area and coordinate the delivery of services that could not be provided by any one city or county. Personal reflection upon this, my father-in-law, who served both in the House and Senate back in 1967, was a co-author on the origination bill for the Met Council. I shared Palm Sunday dinner with him. We had a conversation about this, and at the conclusion of the conversation, he leaned forward and said very quietly, he says, "Fix it. We're here to fix it." 50 years later, the Met Council has evolved from its original focus on planning to include operations and policy making. However, despite its greater influence, the governance model, which has provided, or which provides for all 17 members to be appointed by the governor, has essentially remained unchanged, providing little, if any, opportunity for local communities to have meaningful voice in decisions that impact them. As its reach and mission have steadily expanded and its budget has significantly increased, members are no more accountable to the public. Regardless of which party controls the governor's office, and this legislation is not targeted or critical of any one governor or the Met Council membership, allegiance of the Met Council is to the appointing governor and swings depending upon election outcomes. Policy and direction can shift from governor to governor every 4 years. So members, the question before us is not whether to change the Met Council. It's how to change it. House File 3273 proposes a governance model that provides greater accountability to taxpayers, continuity and stability in regional governance, and responsiveness to local and regional concerns. It conforms to the federal laws of the MPO and is modeled after regional planning bodies in other major metropolitan areas. Minnesota's Metropolitan Council is, in fact, the only one in the nation out of over 400 that has not been made up of elected officials. Mr. Chair, I have a testifier from one of the county commissioners who would like to testify on behalf of the bill. Expedience and brevity being my best friends before you today, I will move directly to his testimony and then welcome the conversation therein. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Milichnik. I'm a, this is a really short chair. Yes.
Let's have you stand up.
Yes,
you know what they gave you? They gave you the bad chair.
Did they?
Yeah, they gave you the
sometimes
bad
my
chair.
Colleagues at
here,
the county board
have
that.
No,
I would always give up a chair to Commissioner Miller.
I'd give
him
mine.
Okay. You can take your whip.
I've never been treated so special over here at the legislature.
Yeah.
All right, well, okay, my time is up. No. I currently serve as the vice chairman for the Carver County Board of Commissioners. I'm a 9-year member of the Transportation Advisory Board. I served several years on their executive committee. I was a member of the Solicitation Criteria Committee of the Transportation Advisory Board, and I'm a former Chaska City Council member. Of course, it's my pleasure to be here this afternoon. Again, I thank you for this opportunity to talk about the governance of the Metropolitan Council. The Met Council governance model for House File 3273 recognizes the importance of the Metropolitan Council in guiding the region's growth and providing vital regional services. This is the premise behind this bipartisan legislation. A strong regional governing body is needed. It must be trusted by the people it serves. It is critical to maintaining and strengthening the vitality of the Metropolitan Council. I also want to note that this bill and this discussion is not focused on any one administration or a specific appointed council members. Those council members have been friends of mine, some of them for a quarter of a century, so I have a great deal of respect for them. This legislation is a response to ever-growing concerns with the lack of trust and credibility between the Met Council and locally elected officials and public stakeholders. As noted earlier, the Office of the Legislative Auditor issued a report in January 2011, following 8 years of the Pawlenty administration, that noted addressing the structure of the Met Council is the first steps to improving the governance of the transit in the region, and concluded that the problems with governance of the transit stem partly from having an appointed Met Council. While the study was focused on transit, the same issues of accountability to the public pertains to the Met Council as a whole. As Representative Hornstein knows, I've spent a lot of time in Denver talking to Dr. Cog. We've had those conversations down there. And they passed the 1 cent sales tax there for transit in their 5-county regional area. And it was I've been watching our legislature for 25 years now, and occasionally you have some difficult conversations about funding transportation in the state of Minnesota. And is that true, Mr. Chairman? But anyway, what happened when they got the 1% sales tax is you had the 42 members of the Met Council. Once they had a direction, they talked to their legislators, and there was a block, and they passed that thing, and they had funding for their region for transit, which has been very successful for them as far as the funding model goes. The governance model proposed in House File 3273 recognizes that for the Met Council to be most effective and accountable, citizens must feel that the body effectively represents their goals and their values. Every major regional planning organization in the United States, with the exception of Minnesota, has a majority of elected members. I may add that I returned from Europe last Friday, and in Munich, in Salzburg, in Paris, they also use elected officials in their regions. So we could be the only one on the planet. I'm not really sure of that, but I'm suspecting that's the case. Of the other 402 MPOs that comprise at least a majority of elected officials who are able to work together, put aside conflicts of interest, and find time to develop successful, thriving metropolitan regions, any reform measure should address the federal MPO compliance requirements. And as Commissioner Schulte has testified before, the Federal Highway Administration, in their letter to the four counties, strongly recommended that we move to the preferred governance model of elected officials. However, here in Minnesota, members of the Metropolitan Council are hand-selected, not elected individuals, but appointed by the governor. Regardless of who the governor is, the answer for credible regional governance lies in greater democracy over the member-appointed process. Instead, we have political appointees with taxing authority, again with taxing authority, the ability to control $3.9 billion in transportation funding. They approve a $1 billion budget, and they set their very own agenda. And after 50 years, the model which may have once worked needs to change. And I often say I don't know anything that really works well, maybe some things, that's been around for 50 years. So the argument that locally elected officials would be unable to serve, or rather be unsuitable to serve on the Met Council because of a conflict of interest, should be both disturbing and insulting. And I can tell you for myself, it's extremely insulting, considering I've been working with military and the private sector for over four decades now. So I prepared myself for making those kind of decisions, and many of my colleagues have done the same. to suggest that political appointees are better able to understand the needs and challenges and opportunities of a community and region better than a city council member or a mayor elected by the public is just plain wrong. In short, the governance of the Metropolitan Council has evolved from a truly metropolitan collaborative planning and problem-solving organization to become just one other state agency that reports immediately to the governor. The Met Council's scope of authority in planning operations and policy setting has greatly increased over the past half century, while at the same time its governance structure has narrowed and become more captive to the changing winds of statewide partisan shifts. This does not serve the public or the region well. House File 3273 is good public policy, and it connects the Met Council to its constituents that it serves with openness and transparency, making it more effective in its important role of regional governance. I very much support urge you support my ask today to support House File 3273. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Why don't you stay put, because we have a question from Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the Commissioner from Carver County would comment on the equity of representation as this bill has reflected along the way, and that is that the representatives from Minneapolis and St. Paul were eliminated. Ramsey County has one, and Hennepin County has two, just reflecting on the population and the fairness of representation.
Commissioner Miller,
yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I believe we've amended that in this bill. So that's no longer the
case. What is the representation now?
Check with the representative.
Thank you, Madam
All
Chair.
Right.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Hausman, at the last stop, we actually added two county commissioners from Hennepin County to be appointed to the board.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding. But so at one point, wasn't there an amendment to remove the representatives from St. Paul and Minneapolis?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling, not to my knowledge.
Representative Hausman.
Hausman. It's been a long day, I'm sorry. No, there has been no intention to remove. There was every intention to address, to your point, the need for more parity or more equity in the representation, and that's why that amendment was adopted at our last committee stop.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Representative Bernardi for this testifier.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And it may be for the author, but is there equal representation for people across the metropolitan area? Are they all have it's proportional representation on the Met Council in your proposal?
Representative Albright.
I would just, Mr. Chairman, if you allow me just a moment.
I will, but I'm going to give Representative Albright the first shot.
Very wise decision, Mr. Chairman.
thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bernardi. I think, I'm not trying to be evasive in my response, but I think there will always be a discussion about the definition in terms of parity or equal representation. What we have attempted to do is align representation on the membership with the stakeholders as well as the constituency groups that are most needful of being represented by seats at the table for the council. And we will continue to address that. But at this point, we feel that there is fair observation by all members to the council based upon the demographics and the needs of the council itself.
Commissioner Malucic, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just from my experience, I understand the argument for parity, but if a person, a truly elected official, and all you and you folks are, if you really care about the region, and many times I've voted for projects in Hennepin County on the tab, in Ramsey County, and intervened in times when I thought Ramsey County was being unfairly treated by staff at Met Council. So if a person really cares about the region, I'm not sure parity is really the major concern. But
I think this addresses that problem. But again, it's more of your commitment to the region and your belief in the vitality of the region and transparency. I think all those issues are important and paramount in most locally elected officials. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Bernardi?
No, Mr. Chair, that's how I understood it, and I do have concerns about it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next testifier.
Yep.
I don't know who that is, Representative.
Commissioner Schulte would also like to have a few words presented to the committee.
Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Schulte. I was a Coon Rapids City Councilman for 12 years and Mayor Pro Tem. I went from there to the Anoka County Board, where I served as a County Commissioner. I'm also a small business owner. I run an auto repair shop in Coon Rapids that's been there for, this is our 60th year now, been there since 1958. I'm a former member of the League of Minnesota Cities. I served on their board of directors, and I'm a former member of the Metro Cities Group. Currently, I am the second vice president or incoming president for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm here in speaking in support of House File 3273. Really appreciate Representative Albright's commitment to this and to good governance and accountability for our region. The four suburban counties of Anoka, Carver, Scott, and Dakota are working together on this because we believe local governments need more representation, not just the counties, but the local governments, the municipalities and the cities. To that end, there are over 40 municipalities that have actually gone through the work of signing resolutions, getting resolutions through their councils, and you see that list of municipalities in front of you, and there are more. There are more that will sign on. Some of them have not signed on because of fear of retribution from the Metropolitan Council on specific issues, whether it's livable communities or whatever it may be. I'm sure you're all familiar that they have to submit comp plans to the Metropolitan Council and they have to be approved by the Metropolitan Council. And many of them have fear that their comp plans won't meet with approval if they come out publicly against the Metropolitan Council. I'm not going to repeat everything that Commissioner Malushnik brought to your attention. I'm hoping you heard it and hoping you understand it. It's truly time. We have very few opportunities to reform the Met Council. These bills come before you almost every year, it seems. But they never get traction. They never go anywhere. The governor's either unwilling or the Senate's unwilling. Right now we have a unique opportunity. The governor, nearing his last days in office, will have an opportunity to have a legacy bill, something that really changes how we govern as a region. People will argue that our region works fine. It does not need reform. Then how come every other region does it different? How come federal law mandates that we do it different? Federal law mandates that we cannot have appointed people on this board. That the Metropolitan Council, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, has to be made up of a majority of elected officials. And yet we don't. We're not that much smarter. We're smart. Minnesotans are really smart. But we're not that much smarter than every other region in the country, or on the planet, if you believe Commissioner Malushnik. I would implore you to pass this through your committee today, get it to the floor, pass it there, and let's find a way to reform the Metropolitan Council this year. It's a unique opportunity to bring accountability and transparency, most importantly, public trust, back to a body. We have one body in the metropolitan area that is revered by just about everybody that sees how it works. That is our TAB, Transportation Advisory Board, but they're advisory only in nature. They advise our Met Council on what to do. The Met Council doesn't always listen, nor does it have to. Why don't we set up a Metropolitan Council that's more like TAB, has at least half elected officials? It just makes sense. It's one body, 34 members. People argue that a Metropolitan Council with 34 members or 30 members is too big. It can't function. It does everywhere else, and it certainly does on our TAB. And it the last two issues I want to point out is our opponents will come up here, opponents of this legislation will come up here and tell you, local elected officials, be it county commissioners, mayors, or city council members, have an inherent conflict of interest. That can't be, because I'm doing that work now. I serve on the TAP. I do that work now. And I vote for stuff in Carver County, in Hennepin County, Washington County, Ramsey County, what's best for the region. I serve on the, a number of different organizations. Let's go with County's Transit Improvement Board. I served there for a number of years and voted for many projects across the metro, whether it was Dakota County's Red Line or many other lines. And we all worked collaboratively to move that along. I serve on the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, where we coordinate refuse and waste recycling throughout the metro area, not just in our county, not just in our cities, but throughout the area. We have that wherewithal. Mayors and council members, many of you probably started there. Mayors and council members are very capable of doing that work. Not all of them will have the time. Not all of them will be willing to do it. But we only need one from each of the 16 districts. The proportionality doesn't change. We still have 16 districts, and somebody from that district will go serve. Hennepin County will pick up one more because of the multitude of residents in their county, but the proportionality will remain the same. I would go on longer, but I know that's not what you want. I will be brief. I'm done now. I will stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. A question from Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with you, Commissioner Schulte. We have a unique opportunity, and I agree with you about accountability and transparency. I think in my time here, I've done a Council of Government Met Council reform bills. I've done an elected Met Council. I've done staggered terms. I've done a bill that sets up a process to change the governance. So, you know, I agree with you, and this idea, I think, I actually worked with Met Council Chair Peter Bell and Commissioner McLaughlin on a variation of this idea. So this isn't new, and I agree that we got to get it done, but what concerns me is that we have three large counties, important counties, that aren't in the Government Transparency Initiative, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington, and our third largest cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington, are not among the cities. So it seems like a geographical divide here, and it's in some respects a partisan divide, when I think there's probably, if you look at the Minneapolis City Council, they've been interested in Met Council reform and even a Council of Governments body, as long as it included cities. So I think there's a lot of regional unanimity, as you point out. But this seems to me, there's a geographic divide in this proposal, and there's a partisan divide. And I hope we can get something done this session. I think at this point, this bill probably wouldn't get signed into law. It's possible that Representative Nash's and Representative Peterson's bill could. And Mr. Chair, so one question. What about these other counties and other cities? Why aren't they on board? Can they? Do you think you could come up with something that they would agree to?
Commissioner Schulte.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, thank you for the question. And I would tell you that we could get those counties and those cities to the table instantly. All we need to do is elect a Republican governor. And they would be here wanting to be back into this initiative, finding a way to reform Met Council. Our county has been on board since 2011. There was a different governor. We were still on board. We still believed in Met Council reform. If this is not about the governor, this is about the governance of the Met Council. The counties you listed, the cities you listed, are currently pleased with the Met Council and the function they're performing. So they're not at the table. I do think this reform will benefit them. I think they're currently unwilling to take a stand because of the politics, the political nature of it. I want to personally thank you for being involved in this for so many years, and I think it goes to show you that it can be bipartisan. It can be nonpartisan. This is something, and this is the year we can do it. With leadership from both sides of the aisle, we can find a way to finally get Met Council reform if we get leaders to stand up and remind everybody that this bill will continue to take shape as it moves through perhaps this committee, perhaps as it goes into a conference committee, and we can get something that the governor will be willing to sign. But we need support from everybody, both sides of the aisle.
Follow up, Representative Horn.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I know, Mr. Chairman, there's several other bills related to Met Council governance that have passed through Chair Runbeck's committee. Will they be heard in this committee? I think maybe they went to GovOps. I'm not sure of the status of those, but I hope we'll have several other options on the floor. What's the plan for bills moving forward on Met Council reform?
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I cannot read the mind of other chairs. I know that this chair plans to hear this bill and move it on, and that's really all I know right now about Met Council reform.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Schulte.
Mr. Chair, a final comment from me. I would urge you, if you decide to reform the Met Council this year, really reform it. Staggered terms is not reform. It's a change. It's something simple that can be done. It's needed. It's very important. It's done in this bill, but it is not Met Council reform. If we do that one little change and maybe tamper with the nominating process a little bit, we are not reforming the Met Council. We are not reforming how it governs. We are simply checking a box and telling people for decades to come we're not interested in reforming Met Council. So I think it's this year. I think now is the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Metro Cities. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 3273 that proposes changes to the governance of the Metropolitan Council. Metro Cities respectfully but strongly opposes the key provisions of House File 3273. Metro City supports staggered terms for the Metropolitan Council, but opposes the proposed change to the governing structure that comprises the Metropolitan Council of county and city officials due to the high potential for ethical conflicts for local officials serving in both public roles. Most city officials would also be unable to serve in the council due to the time commitment that would be required, resulting in a discriminatory appointing process. Metro City opposes the elimination of the Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, included in the bill. The TAB has a reputation for being a model of transparency and accountability and allows for advisory input by a variety of local officials and other stakeholders. City officials highly value the TAB and its structure and function. Mr. Chair and members, thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. I don't see any questions for Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two questions. The first, you just mentioned a potential of conflict of interest and ethical. Could you, in my understanding from the testimony, that every other MPO in the nation has elected officials in it. So can you provide any examples of potential conflicts of interest that have come to light from any of these other, every MPO in the nation? You also mentioned potential for discriminatory. Could you give an example of what you mean by appointments that might be discriminatory?
Mr. Huser.
Mr. Chair, I might defer to Patricia Nauman from Metro Cities on those questions. She might be better able to answer.
Thank you. Welcome to the testifiers table. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your answering.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the executive director of Metro Cities. Just very briefly, Metro Cities, as Mr. Huser pointed out, represents cities in the metropolitan area. And one of the reasons that we were created back in the 70s was to represent cities at the Metropolitan Council. The functions of the Metropolitan Council do include the MPO function, but they go far beyond the MPO function to include wastewater treatment, parks, transit, aviation, and various policy plans that have a very significant nexus with municipalities, actually, rather than the counties. The counties have some nexus with the Metropolitan Council, but a lot of the nexus is really with city government. And some of that nexus and functions of the Metropolitan Council that include being a regulatory function, it includes having the Metropolitan Council review local comprehensive plans that are submitted by local officials. The Metropolitan Council is a funder of various grant programs. And so those are some of the connections that city officials have concerns about when they have looked at the model, this governance model for the Metropolitan Council, and the potential for conflicts for local officials serving in those dual capacities.
Follow-up, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, do you see any conflicts under the present model? You have cities having to submit their comprehensive plans, and I know that at least one of the cities that I represent is in the review process right now of their comprehensive plan for the next 30 years. And as I heard testimony, that there is some cities that did not voice their support for this out of fear of retribution. Do you see the current model as a potential conflict if it's true that there is fear of retribution in some cities not voicing their thoughts on potential adverse impacts to their own comprehensive plan review?
Ms. Dahlman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero, if I understand your question accurately, right now city officials and county officials are not serving on the Metropolitan Council. So you have city officials that submit their comprehensive plans to the regional body. But the conflicts that we are talking about would occur if you have a city official submitting their local comprehensive plan to the regional body, where they then also are reviewing and approving the plan that they just submitted. That's the conflict that I was referencing.
I'll give you one more shot for some
reason. It's not a question, it's just a comment, and I understand that. And my point for my comment there, or question, was to highlight that you have concerns about potential conflicts under the proposed language. What I'm trying to highlight is there are present conflicts, even though it's not representatives from elected officials serving. There are present conflicts under the present model of Metropolitan Council 17-member makeup. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think I understand that point, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Go ahead.
There are certainly tensions and conflicts between local officials and the Metropolitan Council. In fact, that's one of the jobs of the organization that I represent. That's one of our functions, is to represent city interests at the Metropolitan Council to make sure that they're accounted for. So I apologize if I didn't understand your question.
Thank you. We'll move on. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to get back to the idea of understanding that a lot of the MPOs across the United States have elected officials in it. And we're talking about a lot of accusations, or at least suppositions, about what might happen if we have elected officials. My question is, does anybody have any evidence that in these other MPOs that have elected officials, if there has been conflict of interest questions raised, or any other concerns that were raised today?
I don't see any volunteers, Representative Petersburg. Maybe it'll be revealed in the next bit of testimony.
Okay, thank you.
We'll move on to the Citizens League. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Pahua Hoffman. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens League. Today I'm testifying in opposition of House File 3273. The Citizens League is a nonpartisan, nonprofit public policy organization. As many of you know, the Citizens League 1967 report is what led to the creation of the Met Council. Even as originators of the Met Council, we agree that after 50 years, the Met Council needs some reform. This is precisely why we convened a Met Council task force in September 2015. The task force included local officials, representatives from the business community, nonprofit sector, and community members. Over the course of 6 months, the task force studied and debated various governance changes. Elements within House File 3273 were presented and discussed. Because the majority of the task force members were not in favor of these suggested changes, they were not included in the Citizens League's final recommendations. As already mentioned earlier, it concerns the Citizens League that other counties and more cities do not support House File 3273. The Citizens League does support staggered terms, the expansion of the nominations committee to add more local officials, and other changes that increases transparency in the Met Council member selection process. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you, and members.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Stand by. Next, Mr. Hughes, would you care to testify to this bill?
Yes, sir. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Mark Hughes, and I'm a former 12-year member of the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, so I do have some state governance credibility. And I'd like to thank you for this opportunity, members and Chair Parkinson, to testify today. I've had some discussions with Representative Albright on this issue, and mine is a little different than the total bill itself. I also agree that there should be elected officials only serving in that council. It should be brought down to a smaller scale. It should take effect as soon as we can to make it more efficient. However, I'm going to discuss a little bit about Metro Mobility, the history and its operations today. In 1976, the Metropolitan Transit Commission took on what they call Project Mobility. We had at that time six little red buses that you could ride for a quarter in a concentrated area on shorter service hours. Then the service expanded to what it is today, and the Met Council took it over. And when I'm speeding it up for the sake of time, but when Chair Beard retired, was going to retire 3 or 4 years ago, we were working on trying to introduce a bill back then to bring it back to the MTC because we thought it would be more efficient. Let me tell you why. Because we have three or four private contractors now that bid on our FP process to the Met Council. And the same ones get the same contracts or a new contract every time a contract is bid. Now, what we've seen at Metro Mobility, we've seen the service grow, and there doesn't seem to be enough drivers. The problem is that they're not paid well, and we don't have enough buses. Now, somebody got to take ownership in this poorly run system. And so I figure if we bring it back to the MTC, you'll have the MTC union, which that situation will settle itself. They'll get their pay, which will probably cost more in their benefits, but you can rotate weeks. Sometimes the drivers drive big MTC buses, then we have enough drivers for Metro Mobility. So we've alleviated the problem of not having enough buses, drivers, and unionship, and the not being paid enough, and all these inner operational things that aren't working. And I've had some really poor service. I had one driver take me down the wrong way, the one way, twice by the Twin Stadium on the same trip. And there's been some other operational stuff not being strapped in. That's a state law. And so I hope you folks all come together at this table. Mr. Hornstein and some of the Republican folks, I'd like to see some bipartisanship. I want this done now. What should have happened is that there should have been an audit, OLA audit from 2011. I see that Jim Nobles isn't here today. I've requested the thing. I still want the book and the audit from 2011. I want to find out what's going on, and I know that's a lot of years ago, but we had a lot of trouble with computers and telephones, and customer service has been poor. Now, the thing is growing by ridership. I grant you that. But we still don't have enough buses, enough drivers. We have the same old repetitive problem, and nothing's being done except I'm sorry. It's more than I'm sorry. You're affecting people's lives and how to get to work, how to get to church, grocery stores, what have you. And it's time somebody shows ownership. If something's great, then you take pride in your ownership. If something is wrong, then you got to fix it.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Any questions for the testifier?
Yeah.
I do not see any at this time. Thank you for coming forward. Anyone else care to testify for or against this bill? Any other questions for the author? Closing remarks, Representative
Mr. Chair and members, I go back to what my father-in-law and I were discussing on Sunday. 50 years have come and gone with regard to the Met Council, and I will be the first to admit, and I think he would agree, that the legislature has done an unfortunate set of circumstances to the people of Minnesota by abdicating some of their responsibilities that they should have taken care of in a more timely manner. But what they have done is they have pushed them to the Met Council. That has allowed the Met Council now, as you've heard, to go to a budget of $3.9 billion in terms of cash flow that they are responsible for. They answer to a constituency of one, where they are the funder, the reviewer, and the approver of programming across a very, very large cross-section of the constituents that we call Minnesotans. That being said, this is the time, this is the opportunity for we as a body to send a message to those that the Met Council serves that we hear you and that we are going to rectify it for the sake of some very, very constructive and purposeful changes that will bring transparency and accountability back to a body that still has good functions that they are responsible to and for, but on behalf of the of a larger constituency than just one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright. I would renew my motion that House File 3273 be passed to State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. The bill passes. You are on your way, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow evening, Wednesday, at 6 p.m. in this room. The agenda, I believe, has been posted, and we will see you then. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Yeah.